Hello everyone, welcome to Energy in Transition, a weekly series of virtual fireside chats where we will be speaking with key movers and shakers in the clean energy sector to get their expert views on the future of the industry, how we get to net zero, and how things are being affected by COVID-19. My name is Jim Jordan and I'm an energy lawyer at leading national law firm Waitmans, where I specialise in construction and commercial aspects of projects. Each week we're going to be tackling a different topic, and today we're going to be discussing hydrogen. This is currently very topical. Thierry Breton, the EU Single Market Commissioner, has recently announced plans for a new EU-wide partnership to develop clean hydrogen fuel technologies. And very recently, Shell has announced plans to take a green hydrogen plant into operation as early as 2023. And it will be linked to the port of Rotterdam. And the CEO of the port of Rotterdam is quoted as having said that hydrogen is the energy of the 21st century. So I'm delighted to be joined by Professor Joe Howe from the University of Chester. His CV is rather extensive. He is the Executive Director of the Thornton Energy Institute at the University of Chester and is Chair of the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance. Joe also holds a large number of other roles, some of which include the academic member of National Grid's Future of Gas Forum, board member of the Engineering Construction Industry Training Board, and the University of Chester lead on the HyNet Consortium. Professor Howe, thank you so much for joining me today. Before we start properly with the actual interview, it would be really useful if you could provide some sort of oversight as to who you are, what you do, and the funded projects you're involved with. But also, if you could perhaps give somewhat of a beginner's guide or overview of the various uses of hydrogen, because people have heard of hydrogen, but I don't think many people understand how it can be used, in particular, working towards net zero.
Jim, good morning. So my name's Joe Howe. I'm Professor and Executive Director of Thornton Energy Research Institute. Background to me, I'm an academic through and through. I'm an environmental scientist by training. I've spent my life working in the area of sustainable development. Initially, I did a lot of work in the field of risk management, but over the last 10 years or so, I've specialised in the field of energy. And increasingly so, a passion that I have is the issue of trying to make a move and influence a shift in the way in which we consume energy within the UK and beyond to try and reduce carbon emissions and make a contribution really in terms of us trying to alleviate climate change or reduce the impacts of climate change. And that's where I've really begun to get involved in hydrogen. As you rightly mentioned, Jim, I chair this thing called the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance. That brings together a whole swathe of different companies in the Northwest, hydrogen producers, network operators that potentially could move that hydrogen, and hydrogen consumers, mostly in the manufacturing sector, but also looking at possible ways in which new markets in relation to hydrogen could be created. But we'll come on to that, I'm sure, as we go through this discussion. You asked me about the current projects that I'm involved with. One that I'm really excited about being involved in at the moment is funded by the government under something called the Industrial Decarbonisation Grand Challenge. And I'm working with industrial colleagues as well as government colleagues looking at developing an industrial decarbonisation roadmap for the Northwest, and looking at how we can reduce those emissions coming from industry to support those industries and support businesses and support communities in achieving what is actually a statutory obligation to be net zero by 2050. And so we need to start that process now. And I'm helping to develop a roadmap about how industry could contribute to that particular process as we speak. Other projects I'm involved with. I'm doing a project mapping out hydrogen within the Northwest, which has been funded by Costain. And they've very generously given me some funding to support a researcher on that particular project. Rhys Edwards is her name. She's doing a fabulous job on that particular project, in working interchangeably with industry, trying to understand the processes, trying to understand the value proposition about the around the Northwest to develop and lead on a hydrogen economy. I have funding from government through the Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy Department, particularly a funding scheme called Prospering from the Energy Revolution. And again, I've been working with industries in the Northwest, particularly around the North Cheshire area, the Ellesmere Port area, looking at how some of the big industrial producers potentially generate energy which is being consumed in one process, but could it be put into another process more efficiently? Or are they using it at the most effective time? And could the energy that they're consuming at time, say 8 o'clock in the morning, could it be used at a different sort of time? So what's the most efficient way of using that energy? And what's the best way in which we can enhance the competitiveness of those industries by potentially reducing CO2 emissions and potentially reducing the energy consumption at times when perhaps energy is more expensive than it is other times? I have some funding also from the same department, Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, concerned with carbon capture and utilisation. And that's part of a project called HyNet that we have here in the Northwest, HyNet, which is looking at the transition of the Northwest to net zero, utilising carbon capture and storage and utilising hydrogen within industry. And the work that I'm leading with a colleague called Carolina Font Palmer at the University of Chester is concerned with looking at carbon capture per se and looking at the way in which we can move carbon to store it or to utilise it elsewhere. I have another project funded by Urenco, the Uranium Enrichment Company, which is looking at site energy efficiency and looking at how they consume energy and looking whether or not there are efficiency gains to be made around the way in which they use energy, and also now beginning to touch upon whether or not they could become a key player in the whole hydrogen space. And then beyond that, you've already mentioned my role with the Engineering Construction Industries Training Board, where I've been driving the whole net zero agenda and looking at trying to ensure that we produce the skills necessary to realise the opportunities for supply chains and for communities around the emerging hydrogen economy. And I've been doing quite a bit of work looking at the extent to which hydrogen could form a focus for the post-COVID recovery and response. And maybe that's something that we could come back to later. Jim, hopefully that's enough to give you a bit of a flavour of what I do, but I'm a professor. I can talk for hours and carry on talking about the projects I do if you want.
That, Joe, I mean, that's fascinating. And I think one of the things that interests me is the array of the projects that you're working on, the variety of the projects that you're working on, and the fact that you're working closely with both government and industry.
Yeah.
In terms of people, well, for the benefit of people who aren't particularly familiar with the uses of hydrogen, sort of in general and high level terms, how can it be applied? How can it be used to help us, firstly, to assist energy consumers, but also to help us move towards net zero? Without being too technical, because I know it is very technical, you know, broadly, what do you think people would need to understand about the uses of hydrogen in the context of energy and net zero?
Okay. The first thing to say is that gas, methane in particular, is used a lot in the manufacturing process at the moment, and it's used a lot in heat. So any one of your people, any of the people that are watching this today, will inevitably or probably have a gas-fired central heating system within their households. The fuel that drives that is methane. Methane is a major emitter of carbon dioxide. And I can see, there is work going on at the moment in the UK looking at how we can transition from using methane to using hydrogen in the households and having household appliances that can mix potentially with methane at the moment and carry on using. But by mixing it with methane, by mixing hydrogen with methane, it already reduces the carbon emissions. But perhaps over time, transition to complete heating systems in the household around hydrogen. And there's a great program going on out there that's a company called Arup is overseeing. And if some of you, if your people watching today want to look into that program, it's called the High for Heat program, High for Heat program. Another way in which people will begin to consider hydrogen in the future, and they may already be considering this, Jim, is hydrogen fueled vehicles. So hydrogen trains, for instance, a company called Alstom here in the Northwest is really championing the opportunities afforded by hydrogen trains. So perhaps refit the existing diesel fleet that's in place around the UK with hydrogen powered engines. So at the moment, anyone that's been to a train station where there's a diesel train going all the time, you'll be aware of the emissions and you'll be aware of the impact it has upon air quality in that particular train station. If you have a hydrogen train, the only emission from a hydrogen train is water. So you've still got the clean air, you've not got any emissions associated with it. And the same can be said for hydrogen vehicles, hydrogen cars, fuel cell cars. Toyota in particular have been leading this agenda globally around the movement towards fuel cell cars. But also there's a significant shift, I think, particularly in the UK, around the opportunities afforded by heavy goods vehicles and maybe response vehicles like fire engines and potentially ambulances to move towards those fuel cell vehicles. And again, no emissions associated with them. The only emission is water. Manufacturing energy plants at the moment mostly consume methane. No reason why we couldn't transition them across to hydrogen. So fuel switch from methane over to hydrogen. And again, there are several projects in the UK which at the moment are considering that particular opportunity, this fuel switching opportunity. So there's a lot going on out there at the moment in the hydrogen space.
Joe, I mean, I know you've just touched on it because, you know, there are a vast array of uses for hydrogen and many projects, many of which you're working on by the sounds of it. You've talked about your relationship with industry and with government, and it sounds as if you're receiving funds from both private sector industry and government funds. Is it the case that government is absolutely key to the success of the implementation of wider hydrogen projects?
I think the government's playing a really important role right now, but I don't think it's the role of government to necessarily completely enable this transition, this clean growth transition towards hydrogen, Jim. I do think that there are other dimensions as well. I think it's really important that government helps to kickstart this, and they have been supporting this with some of the projects that I've mentioned. But ultimately, at the end of the day, they've got to stand on their feet financially. So I think it's really important that they're accelerating the development of these technologies so that eventually industry and other investors will realize that there is a financial return on this and that potentially it could be a cheaper form of energy, but certainly a form of energy which has very few emissions and is potentially a form of energy which will enable the UK industry households to comply to legislative requirements around net zero. So yes, I think government are doing a fabulous job kickstarting this, but ultimately it's got to stand on its own two feet, if that makes sense to you.
It does, Joe. And sort of in the same vein, what are the key challenges that you see? I mean, it sounds as if there is funding there, private sector and public sector funding to help. You're working with the Northwest Hydrogen Alliance and you're looking at sort of certain clusters where business and infrastructure can be developed around a hydrogen economy. What do you see as being the key challenges? And I suppose that question is sort of in two phases, which may well be overlapping. What are the key challenges as you know that you're aware of, that you're seeing? But in addition to that, I suppose we have to ask, how do those key challenges change in light of what's going on with COVID-19, if at all?
Yeah, can I kick off on this one with the COVID-19 issue,
yeah,
Jim?
Sure.
Because it's devastating what's happening across the UK at the moment. And, you know, as the government quite rightly says, we're all doing a fabulous job right now, but it's really difficult. I find this really difficult, just doing this remotely, all the different skills that I'm having to learn very rapidly in relation to doing business and doing work. And that's challenging in its own right, but there are a number of other ones. I think post-COVID, and I think people were concerned about this pre-COVID, people are concerned about climate change. Yeah, right now under COVID, we're all concerned about social distancing and the need to do that. And social distancing does save lives. But post-COVID, I really want us to start thinking about, well, 1.5 degrees. And how many lives will we save if we actually keep climate change below 1.5 degrees? You know, last year at the Climate Change Summit, the UN talked about we've already reached a 1.2 degree increase since the Industrial Revolution in world temperatures, yeah? Another 0.3 of degrees, that will have devastating consequences, they're saying. How many people are going to die because of that? What sort of world are we leaving to our children if we get to that 1.5 degree stage just during our lifetime, Jim? So I'm really, as you can see, I'm really passionate about this. It's really important that we begin to start talking about that 1.5 degrees. But some of the other challenges, well, some of the challenges around hydrogen. A lot of people may well have in the back of their mind the Hindenburg disaster of the 1930s and think, oh, hydrogen, it's all very explosive, it's all very dangerous. So I do think one of the challenges we may well have is with people themselves and what I call the social license to operate with hydrogen. So it's really important with some of the projects that I've been talking about that we engage people in this particular agenda and take them on that agenda. That's take them on that journey. That's why I'm really enjoying having this discussion with you. There does need to be a campaign to talk to people about hydrogen. Let's talk about hydrogen with people. At the moment, I talk to government and I talk to business. There needs to be much more of this to get the messages out there to the people. I talk to my students, hopefully they take some of these lessons home, but there is a need for a proactive campaign to talk to people about hydrogen. And clearly the hydrogen technologies that I've been talking about, I think they can be rolled out really, really quickly. I've talked about climate change. I've talked about the positive impact upon air quality as well. There's significant opportunities here. What are the challenges? I think there's another challenge here, Jim, around regulation, trying to ensure that we all comply with the law, trying to ensure that bodies like the communities and local government, the Environment Agency, the Health and Safety Executive are all aligned so we all have the right licenses, the right permits in place, that there is a safety case wrapped around these particular technologies. So that they're all aligned. And that's potentially a role for you, Jim, in terms of your legal practice, I think, to support people on that particular journey. So lots of challenges, maybe another challenge, Jim, the finances, the investments that are required. There could be tax breaks from governments around this in a post-COVID world, but equally there may well be opportunities here if we get support from government to export the technologies we're developing and to export the skills that I'm teaching my students in to attract investment. So the funding side is another challenge. I'm rambling. Anything else there, Jim?
No, you're not. You're making some really, really interesting points, Jay, to be honest. And it overlaps slightly, but leads nicely into the next question in terms of, people have prejudices against hydrogen for reasons that you've touched upon. What's the key message? There are challenges and you've highlighted many of those challenges, but what's the key message that you would like people to take away in terms of hydrogen? Obviously, I think people are more familiar with a wind farm. They know what it looks like. They know what it does. They know how it can be used. Same with a solar farm. They broadly understand how they work and how the green technology aligns. But what would you, for someone watching this who is not familiar with hydrogen, or perhaps has underlying prejudices against hydrogen, what would be your key message to them? What would you want them to take away from this?
Right now, Jim, my concerns about the current crisis and the current crisis that we're living in and the lockdown that we're living in and the COVID world that we're living in, But in my mind, I'm also very excited about the opportunities afforded by the recovery and response to this current crisis. You know, the post-COVID, the post-coronavirus world will provide us with a significant opportunity. Our world will look different. People will ask some critically constructive questions about the way we've been operating in our lifetimes. And is that the most appropriate way to operate? I think people will want to change for the better. We'll be looking for mechanisms to change. We'll be looking for a cure. We'll be looking for a cure for the good. We're looking for a cure for coronavirus right now. But I think we'll be looking for a cure for the planetary good, if you understand what I mean. So I think it will provide us with a great opportunity to consider what that post-COVID world might look like, a fabulous chance to think about. To think about, Jim, what we want to leave our children and what we want to leave our grandchildren in the future. During our lifetimes, you know, the climate change has emerged. 10 or 15 years ago, there was quite a bit of scientific doubt about whether or not climate change was actually taking place. Now, scientists are all aligned, governments are aligned that climate change is a real issue for us. So I think this is a fabulous chance for us to consider the impact that we're having upon climate change, the impact that we're having upon emissions that generate that climate change, and hydrogen can play a key role in reducing those emissions, as I've said. But equally, the quality of the air that we breathe in our towns and our cities and the problems with air quality very often are associated with hydrocarbon vehicles and the opportunity to shift from hydrocarbon vehicles to hydrogen vehicles. No emissions, just water vapour.
Joe, your passion is shining through. I'm going to be slightly unfair to you now. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, which we're trying to ask everyone that we're interviewing on these virtual fireside chats. The first one is, please provide three words that represent getting us to net zero.
Gosh, I sound like I'm being interviewed for a job now, Jim. Three words. Okay, let me just reflect upon what I've been talking about. I think I've been talking about industry. I think I've been talking about innovation. And I've been talking about investments. Industry, Jim, I think can lead the way on this through something called the Industrial Decarbonisation Grand Challenge and drive forward a change in their manufacturing processes and the way in which they consume energy to shift from methane to hydrogen. Innovation, I've been really impressed. I've been a beneficiary from it, but I've been really impressed with the innovation that's taking place in the innovation space around hydrogen technologies that's been supported by governments. And then investment. We do need investment to make this happen, but I do think we're at that tipping point in terms of industry wants this. I think the innovation's already taken place. I think the infrastructure's in place to support this. We just need the investment around this now, but I think it's over to the free market to decide that. I think we're ready for that investment. I just want to get out there and begin to sell some of our ideas to the international world, through maybe the Department for International Trade, to ensure that we're right at the cutting edge of this globally and people want to invest in the UK to realise the opportunities around this. So industry, innovation, investment. That sounds quite good, actually.
It sounds very, actually could be a new logo perhaps for the Energy Institute. I mean, it's interesting, slightly unsurprisingly, I suppose, you know, one of the key themes across various technologies is the importance of investment. And I think potentially the investment is there. So it, fingers crossed, it gets applied across a broad mix of technologies. Unsurprisingly, the second part of the question is, please provide three words that represent stopping or preventing us getting to net zero. Lack of any of the former three, presumably.
Yeah, I don't like coming up with the same three. three words that are potentially stopping us from achieving net zero, particularly in relation to hydrogen, Jim. Do we have the necessary infrastructure in place to deliver on this? At the moment, we probably don't. So there is a need to invest into infrastructure that can deliver hydrogen safely and securely into industry, into people's houses, into people's cars. I do think that we need to ensure that we have a robust, safe, secure infrastructure that people subscribe to, so it has that social license. The technology, yes, we've made substantial strides in developing technology over the course of the last 5 years, but there is a need to just push that a little bit further so that the investors are prepared to invest in that. I think we're there, but I think that technology at the moment just needs to get out there and to secure that investment. And then, Jim, finally, or the third one, you asked me for three, and I've hinted at this as well in our discussion, I think, is the issue of policy, regulation. I've talked about policy. Are the policies all aligned yet? Are the policies coming out from government, communities, and local government around planning aligned with what's coming out from business, energy, industrial strategy? Are they aligned with those that are coming out from the Department of International Trade? Are they cascading down to local authorities so that they're aligned as well? So infrastructure, technology, and policy. Oh, and Jim, maybe a fourth one. I'm an academic, aren't I? I've forgotten for a second. Skills are really, really important. I'm pushing you now. Skills are really important. I do a lot of teaching. I love teaching. You can see my passion for the communication of science here. Skills are really important. I want to ensure that what we're doing here, the future workforce of tomorrow, those 14 to 21-year-olds right now, who perhaps I engage with most, have the skills in place to move into industry, to move into the hydrogen and clean growth supply chains, to realize the opportunities and have careers in this particular space. So skills is a fourth one.
I will give you the fourth one on this occasion, Joe. Unfortunately, that is all we've got time for on today's session. We've had some really interesting insights. Joe, you're clearly very passionate. You're involved with a wide number of very interesting projects, and you've raised some really interesting points around the challenges, potential challenges, but also the benefits and the skills market that the hydrogen can offer. So really interesting. Thank you very much. This interview is available, will become available on the website of waitmans.com, as well as other social media channels, including LinkedIn and Twitter. Joe, I'm sure you won't mind people looking you up and potentially contacting you through the University of Chester or your work.
Absolutely delighted to, Jim. One of my jobs, I might have mentioned this, is that communication of science. Delighted to work with anyone on this to get the message out there and to reassure people, but to work with people, to take people on this particular journey. Delighted to.
Fantastic. Okay. All that remains to be said is that I hope you enjoyed today's interview. We will be back next week with a new guest to get some further expert opinion and insights on the energy transition. Thanks very much.